She's Canadian? Jessica Parker Kennedy. She's Canadian, but she doesn't look like she looks.
She doesn't look Canadian?
No, she looks something else.
You mean her head doesn't flap?
I'm into it, though. Natural disaster.
I was going to set the over-under at like 3 minutes before we say this episode is going to be a natural disaster.
I'll probably open with that.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I would take the under hard.
What's up? This is Movies On Up. Favorite natural disaster episodes. I am Dave, joined by the Dante's Peak to my volcano, Ryan.
Or the Deep Impact to your... Okay, wait a minute. I guess not. We can't talk about
one of those may come up later.
One of them will come up later.
At least one of them will come up later. I am Dave. He is Ryan. We are Movies On Up. This is our favorite natural disasters episode.
Not that we have favorite natural disasters, but favorite movies centered around a natural disaster in honor of the Jon Snow flick Pompeii that comes
out.
He
lived for a dream that wouldn't die. I forgot to say our tagline this week. Yeah, this is in honor of Pompeii, which apparently about a volcano, but apparently there's a lot more going on. And
yeah, I guess it'd be like hard to tell the story of a just town that gets covered in volcanic ash. End of story. You know, you could do that in a National Geographic episode. Spoiler alert, they have. I've seen it.
Anyways, he lived for a dream that wouldn't die. That is our tagline for this week. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up. moviesonup@gmail.com. Facebook.com/moviesonup. Twitter @moviesonup. Follow us. Like us. Also, email us. Say hi. If you are correct and we pick you, you will get an awesome Movies On Up prize package. The first one of 2014 has been mailed out and will be arriving hopefully before we get Pompeii'd. Can I use that as a verb?
I think you can, although...
Hopefully before the end of the world.
Yeah, definitely. Which, spoiler alert, some of these natural disasters that I have, I think I kind of went like on the larger scale. For most of them, they are, in fact, about the end of the world.
A couple of mine are.
Well, one of yours is that it may come up later.
That may come up later very high. Two of mine are, then it's my number two also.
Okay.
I'll adjust. Usually on a list, I can come up with about 15 to 20, and then I narrow it down, I whittle it down. This one I came up with about 8, and I eliminated one because it took everything I had not to put Sunshine number one, because I rave about that movie so much anyway. So natural disaster, you kind of limit yourself.
I don't know if you limit yourself, because I mean, I could think of a ton, but I don't like them.
That's the thing.
So I didn't want to put them on my list.
Of those 8, here's the thing. I came up with 8 off top of my head. One of them is Hard Rain. Christian Slater and Morgan Freeman,
yeah,
where the town floods during a bank robbery or something. And the other is Sunshine. So I really came up with 6 legitimate ones. And, I mean, I like them all. Maybe that's just because I thought of ones off the top of my head that I liked. I didn't do a lot of research because
It's only a list of 5?
Yeah, and I liked those, so I might have missed some. Usually I do some due diligence and make sure I didn't skip anything.
Not today, folks.
Yeah, not today. Or next week, probably. But I don't know what we're doing next week. But until this is a natural disaster, this episode. This is what happens when I host.
5, almost 6 minutes it took to get that out. Dave and I set the over-under at like 3 minutes, so we did twice as well as we thought.
It depends if it was over under on if it sounds like a natural disaster. We were about 15 seconds. Ryan, your 5th favorite natural disaster movie.
I tried as hard as I could not to duplicate and talk about the same movies from week to week. Sometimes you just can't avoid it. Dave tried to not put Sunshine on his list because he just talked about it. But I know I just talked about this Wolfgang Peterson joint a couple weeks ago. And really, I think there's a couple natural disaster movies specifically from Wolfgang Peterson that you could have chosen. I did not choose Poseidon because I don't like it, but I do like Perfect Storm quite a lot from 2000, starring George Clooney, Mark Wahlberg, John C. Reilly, Diane Lane. I don't usually learn a lot when I do these lists, I guess, but I learned that I don't like Nay. I hate natural disaster movies. It does nothing for me. But the fact that this one didn't immediately come to mind, I guess just proves how much I don't like the genre. Because I don't think of this as a natural disaster movie, but that is a giant storm. That's a hell of a wave. That is the definition of a natural disaster, and the storm certainly had disastrous effects on the crew. The reason I think specifically that I like this movie better than the other ship sinking movie, Poseidon, is that this one is much more intimate. It makes you really feel like you are a crew member of the Andrea Gale. I never get that feeling with Poseidon. You don't seem like you, I guess, bond as much with the people on the ship as you do in The Perfect Storm. And I mean, this was probably the first John C. Reilly role that I really noticed him in. And I was like, oh, okay, this guy's a pretty good character actor. And then, you know, he went on to kind of do the John C. Reilly thing where, you know, again, character actor, but I known definitely way more for his comedies, but was really, really good in this movie. Everybody was. I mean, I think we first started talking about it when we were talking about Marky Mark, who actually is a very talented dude. And being on the screen with George Clooney, who's obviously tremendous, you know, those guys both held their own, acquitted themselves very nicely. And I think it's actually a really good movie that if I stop and think about it, of course it's a natural disaster movie. And of course I need to have five. So what's going on there?
This was actually my number five also. So I think we're going to set a trend with some crossover here. But you nailed it about the cast. You got, I mean, it goes way down. You got Clooney, Wahlberg, Diane Lane, John C. Reilly, William Fichtner, John Hawks, Alan Payne, Mary Elizabeth Master Antonio, and Karen Allen. That's heavy at the top build. Those are all people that extremely talented. So to see somebody like John C. Reilly stick out in that movie, like Clooney almost leveled down to that one. Like Clooney was still very Clooney, but the cast was so good around him that he didn't over. We talked about in Lone Survivor, Mark Wahlberg, kind of his star power overshining.
Yeah, the other
everybody
three.
Else, Clooney kind of blended in this movie, I think. And it worked out well because it did need to be an ensemble. You did feel very close. My only complaint is it should have been more powerful. And this, you talk about, we talk now, trailers coming are showing too much. This movie, we're talking 14 years ago. This is 2000. It showed the capsize scene in the trailer. It's the poster. Yeah. For this movie is the capsize scene, and it's like that should be the most powerful moment of this movie. That's the point where you realize it's not going to end well,
right? Like, and I know, like it's you know based off a true story, so it's like the Titanic. Is it a spoiler alert to find out that the ship sinks? Well, no, not really. But I think that more people probably know the story of the Titanic than
this isn't a common story, and the average moviegoer could go in and not know the fate of these characters. But to kind of show that in the trailer and on the poster, that's my biggest complaint about this movie, because that scene should have been more powerful. But sit there in theaters when it happens, it's like, I've seen this a million
times.
Maybe
it's a hard movie to sell if you don't have that. I don't know. I'm just kind of trying to be the devil's advocate here. I mean, it is a really good movie, and I don't think that, again, I don't need the giant wave to think, this is worth sitting through. I look at that cast,
and
that's enough for me.
Your mainstream audience, okay, for me, it's, you have all these actors in a small space together. That's enough for me. Like, that cast in an intimate setting, I'm on board. Clooney was huge movie star at the time. This is at the beginning of Wahlberg's rise. Like, he had been, you know, kind of in a hot streak here. So you do have to sell it to the mainstream. And it's such a good movie. I was actually just talking about it at work last week. It just randomly came up, and I talked about how good it was. And I'm not a big shill for Wolfgang Peterson for the most part.
Neither am I, really.
And my complaint is that there should have, the parts that should have had like an emotional impact should have had more of an emotional impact. But overall, it's worth that. It's worth it for the cast alone. So since we were the same on number five, let's see if we make it two for two.
We won't.
And Ryan, you're number four.
I can guarantee that this will not be crossover because you hate this movie. But it is the first of my stuff smashing into earth natural disaster movies. It's from 2011. I've got a lot of new movies on this list. 2011. Directed by Master,
don't even,
it is Lars von Trier, starring Kirsten Dunst, Charlotte Gainsbourg, Kiefer Sutherland. It's It's Melancholia.
I hate this movie.
I know. I did mention that you hate it, but I actually do like this movie quite a bit. It is by far and away one of the less weird flicks that Von Trier has produced, but I think it really does.
Except for that first hour that has nothing to do with the movie.
I guess it sets up Kirsten Dunst's her mental state going in to the events of the end of the world, which is really what this movie's about. There's a giant blue planet called Melancholia, which is coming to smash the Earth. Von Trier has some dream sequences where things are really, really visual. I think that you'd like this movie a lot more if you were high on mescaline or something while you were watching it, because it gets kind of trippy. There's some scenes where the movie largely takes place on a golf course. There's this big stately manor on this golf course, and they're just kind of running in the middle of the evening and sinking into the greens as like fire is coming from the sky. It's really, really strange, almost biblical, I guess. But I love the imagery. I'm not sure I know what it means, but I thought it was a really beautifully shot movie. And I think that Von Trier is a very interesting visual director. The problem is, I think a lot of times, I don't know if he just is trying to be controversial for the sake of controversy. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit more when Nymphomaniac comes out. But I think this movie, and you hate it, all right, fine. But I mean, as like a man on the street, if you were going to try and expose yourself to the work of Lars von Trier, I would say start with this one.
And here's the thing about this movie is I love the idea. If you cut out the 12-minute opening credits for nothing and the hour-long wedding sequence that has nothing to do with anything, and you start it and turn it into a 90-minute piece about Kristen Dunst's character losing her mind, living with her sister Charlotte Gainsbourg, and the strain that's putting on her marriage with Kiefer Sutherland while we know the end of the world is coming, that's a fantastic story there that I'm interested in. But when you're sniffing your farts for an hour and a half before we even get to that, I don't care. Andy, I just want it to, I want my world to end. I want the planet to crash into me so I don't have to finish this godforsaken movie. It's such a terrible, terrible movie. And anybody that wants to start with Lars von Trier, I disagree saying start with this one. I just say, don't.
Just don't.
You're
start.
Okay.
Don't
You're all start. Right. I should have went with my number four first because it transitions into our number five a lot better than it transitions into Melancholia. We talked about Wolfgang Peterson having a couple instances that could have shown up on this list. Well, my number four is another director that really likes to destroy stuff and destroys a lot of stuff. I'm talking Roland Emmerich with 2004's The Day After Tomorrow, starring Dennis Quaid, Jake Gyllenhaal, Emmy Rossum's in there. I think Ian Holm shows up. It's been a while since I've seen it. Dash Mihawk, I like seeing him build that high. I don't think I've ever seen him build that high before. But weather movie. I mean, it's not necessarily It's some climate shift that suddenly freezes the world and creates an ice age, and Dennis Quaid is on the hunt for his son. There's some cool visuals in here. There's enough to it that doesn't make it just a typical Roland Emmerich movie.
Is this the only Roland Emmerich movie you have on your list?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like I said, there's other ones that could be on here.
Sure. I mean, I think 2012 is kind of like the kissing cousin to this. And
yeah.
To me, it seems like those movies, you know, we talked about how you sell them to like mass audiences. And it seems like, especially with The Day After Tomorrow, because it wasn't so much based on the idea of, well, everybody thinks the world's going to end in 2012 anyway. But, you know, you see that cataclysmic weather and you see, like, the Statue of Liberty getting messed up. And I think that sells it. Things that people are familiar with, you just watch for the special effects, I guess, which, again, is kind of partially his shtick. I mean, I can remember, like, when Independence Day came out on DVD, like that was the one DVD that my dad had to get because, oh, look, it's going to look great digital. And he was not wrong. It does look better than it does on VHS. But this dude can blow some stuff up.
Yeah, and the visuals were cool in this. And I liked it because it wasn't just, oh, a volcano is going to explode. We're in the middle of a hurricane. It was something that theoretically is possible, but it was kind of a fictional natural disaster, which I mean, not It's not something, it wasn't a hurricane movie or a tsunami movie or a volcano movie. It was something different. And to me, there was enough there to not make it the standard Roland Emmerich movie. I thought Gyllenhaal was really good, and I thought Quaid did a fantastic job. Like, there was enough human story here that a lot of his stories lack, a lot of his movies lack. And I feel like it was enough there to keep me going, because I'm not his biggest fan.
My number three is another new movie. It's from 2012. It's not, in fact, 2012. It's an Oscar-nominated movie directed by J.A. Bayona, starring Naomi Watts, Ewan McGregor, Tom Holland. It is The Impossible. Another big old wave. I guess I have really like two categories when it comes to natural disasters. There's either giant wave a la The Impossible or The Perfect Storm, or there's things smashing into Earth a la every other one of my movies and Melancholia. Poor Naomi Watts, I mean, she really gets the hell beat out of her in this movie. Being based off another true story, I think does that. Came across in the marketing of the movie that it's a true story, it's an impossible story, but it is a true story. So I think knowing that going in, a little bit like Lone Survivor, you know, you feel so bad for these people because they just keep getting the hell beat out of them. And you really just want to kind of wave the white flag and be like, all right, we get it. Like Storm, just leave them alone. She's pretty tore up. I get it, but it just keeps going. Both movies were very realistic in the way that they beat up their characters. It wasn't anything over the top that you didn't necessarily think that, oh, there's no way they would survive that, but you could be, I really see where that could really hurt and ruin your day. It was also very, like I said, very unrelenting. It seems like that the tsunami scene lasts for like 20 minutes. It could even be longer than that, but it just, once it starts, it really does just kind of keep going. As high as the suspense was during the tsunami scene, I think that, you know, most of the story was, you know, about the family trying to reconnect with each other, and just how many close calls they had, and how if, you know, you were 10 seconds one way or the other, they may never have found each other. Spoiler alert, they do. I think that was even maybe a bit more tense than the actual storm itself. But a really good movie I didn't expect to like when I saw it. It was just, well, it was nominated, so I guess I have to watch it. But as it turns out, it's one of my favorite natural disaster movies.
It's also my third favorite natural disaster movie. We'll say it's my third. It was slightly higher. But fantastic. And you mentioned all the aspect of the natural disaster. And yes, it's a natural disaster story, but as like a father of three, I related to the human aspect of it and the family aspect of it. And that, yes, you're getting your ass kicked over and over and over again, but it's that bond and that love that you have to see your kids. And it's like, okay, I could see getting through that. I could see not letting that get beat. And I could see just that drive. And Naomi Watts was good, but I thought she was probably the third strongest performance in the movie.
Yeah.
Between Ewan and the older son,
yeah.
I thought were phenomenal. And this is one of those, yeah, you know the story, you know they live, so I mean, that's one thing, and when they debuted the movie, the premiere of the
they
movie, the family
in,
was
yeah.
sitting right there.
Spoiler alert to everybody in the theater.
But I mean, it doesn't, you don't lose it for a second, and you realize, like, oh, this is rough, and you know the ending, but you can't see how that ending is possible. It just seems like such an impossible ending, but it's so good, and the tsunami scene is good because it's real, and it the effects are great, the impact is great, everything about it, the just brutality of it is great, and it's more about the people than the effects, whereas that's where we talked about Roland Emmerich
it's
movies.
It's not gory for the sake
of Wolfgang
yeah.
Peterson movies, where it's all about the effects. This is about the effects on people. The other one, whichever, I don't know which one is.
Effects and Apex.
Yeah, but this movie is so good, and it's about to show up on the movie channels, I think, this Saturday. And it's just like, oh, this is probably going to be one that I'll watch like almost any time it's on if Pitch Perfect's not on. It's just such a good movie, which is why it was so high up my list all the way at number three.
Yeah, exactly. do you want to skip our co-number twos as well?
What's your number two?
You talked about effects, effects, special effects. And that is something that this director does. I would say he's on par with Roland Emmerich, and I think that we probably like more Roland Emmerich movies than we like Michael Bay movies, but I will give him credit for 1998's Armageddon. It was absolutely the perfect summer movie. I think it came out like the first week of July in 98. Bruce Willis, Billy Bob Thornton, Ben Affleck, Liv Tyler, et al., a bunch of folks in this. You had big-time movie stars and big-time action. And that is one thing that Michael Bay can do with the best of them is blow some stuff up. He was really the perfect guy to direct this movie. And it doesn't hurt that you had a screenplay that was written by Jonathan Hensley and J.J. Abrams as well. So he was probably working from, if not his best source material, it was definitely up there. I tend to have a problem with Michael Bay movies. They tend to miss that human element of the story. Armageddon did not miss that. And I think that that probably had more to do with Abrams' involvement than anything else. Sure, I guess it was cheesy at times, but it was cheesy in kind of a mass appeal type way, which is kind of what you have to have for a blockbuster. You know, it has to be acceptable, and it has to appeal to the widest cross-section of people. And especially in 98, before it became sort of this hipster thing to hate Michael Bay, and he's just as responsible for that as hipsters are. But definitely in 1998, I don't know if you'd really run across somebody that would honestly look you in the face and be like, no, I don't like Armageddon. I think that was a stupid movie. Because it wasn't. It was a great summer blockbuster movie.
We don't have a co-number two.
Whoa!
Because I went the other way in 19. My number two, it was my number one, but we'll talk about it now. My number two is from 1998.
Another asteroid movie.
A movie that I feel got overshadowed because of the theatrics of Armageddon. It's Deep Impact. Whereas Armageddon took this idea of, oh, there's an asteroid going to crash into the planet. Let's turn it into an action movie. Deep Impact went the other way and made it a human story. There's a comet heading for Earth, and if they can't destroy it, the world's going to end. It's going to destroy the planet. And it covers a lot of ground. There's so many different story aspects to it. You have the government basically deciding who can go to the safe ground. They have a place they think is safe. Who's eligible to go? Who do they want to rebuild the planet with? So there's that kind of system. You have Taya Leone as the news reporter who's reporting the whole thing. Elijah Wood and the young Lily Sobieski. You know, it shows the impact on the children. And then you have the spaceship with Ron Eldard, and I think Favreau was on there. And I mean, the cast of this thing is huge. It's such a good movie. Like, I think it's a shame that it came out so close to Armageddon, because it's a legitimately epic, good, heart-wrenching just story. And where I thought Armageddon lacked characters, like, it was a Michael Bay movie. Like, yeah, it was his best source material. It's probably the best Michael Bay movie. But I never connected to Affleck or Liv Tyler or Buscemi or Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis, really?
Yeah,
that didn't move you to tears.
At that point, it felt too much. It didn't move me to tears as much as Taya Leone and her dad making up after so many years of just not liking each other, or Elijah Wood giving up his spot in the future to go get Lily Sobieski, or anything that happened in Deep Impact, really. And the scene with the astronauts, at least they're gonna name schools after us. Like scenes like that, like, I just rattled off a bunch of stuff that hit me more than the one emotional scene that Armageddon tried to pack in. And that's not all of them. It's such a good movie. I like the aspect of it because, much like Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, where you kind of get different people's reactions to what the world's going to be like at the end, this was all that in a semi-realistic tone. And I mean, you have the news angle, you have the government angle, you have the people on the street angle, you have the astronauts trying to fix it, not in an action movie type of way. Directed by Mimi Leder, who's TV director her whole career, and then had like a 4-movie span that included this and Pay It Forward, and then pretty much all TV after that, which is weird because it was done well. The story, again, there's a lot going on, but it was put together very, very well. And if you skipped this movie in 98 because Armageddon was so cool and kick-ass, go back and watch it. Like, just try Deep Impact because it ages well. I just watched it maybe a month ago, And it's a good movie. It's actually legitimately really, really good.
So that puts us on our number ones, which I don't know if it's coincidence or just by happenstance, but you've already mentioned my number one.
I figured I just did.
You just did, yeah. Which really shouldn't come as a surprise. It is my favorite movie from the year of our Lord 2012. It is Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, directed by Lorraine Scafaria, starring Steve Carell, Keira Knightley. And why not top off the list with another world getting smashed, this time not by a planet, Melancholia, but by Matilda, the asteroid. Dave kind of mentioned it's an interesting take on what you do with your time when you know that your time is running out. Carell spends pretty much the entire movie trying to essentially wrap up his storylines as if he were writing his own series finale, trying to make sure that all his story arcs get a conclusion before the asteroid slams into the Earth and kills everybody. It seems like everyone else in the world is just kind of devolved into this hedonistic behavior. I keep thinking of the scene where they're at the, it's like the little restaurant with Gillian Jacobs. That's tremendous.
And TJ Miller.
Yeah. A lot of weird scenarios that Carell gets put into. But the movie, I think, had a lot of heart. You got to give him credit for just having this singular focus that, you know, he's kind of make up with his dad. And that's really the most important thing in the world for him. You know you're going to die, so it's like, well, let me just try and make things right before that happens. And doing so with Keira Knightley is not really a bad way to go either.
This is another one that falls into I wanted to like it more because I love Carell. I love everybody in it. I enjoyed the movie. I guess I just wanted more from it. And it's still good. It's still enjoyable. But I think my expectations were so high. It's similar to a movie from 1998 that actually didn't make my list, but called Last Night, starring Don McKellar and Sandra Oh. It's pretty much the exact same plot, except Last Night is the last night on Earth. It's the same scenario where we know the world's going to end and these two strangers meet. So, I mean, pretty much the same plot. Last Night just took it a little bit more seriously. So for my default number one, which jumped from number three to number one because of some dancing around.
These lists are fluid.
Yeah. Not so much about a natural disaster, but involves a tsunami. It is 2010's Hereafter, directed by Clint Eastwood, starring Matt Damon and a boatload of other people. You know, it's one of those multiple storyline movies that everybody's dealing with death in a certain way, and Matt Damon does his thing, and it's passable. I mean, it's a good movie.
For your number one, you're not giving it the glowingest of reviews.
I mean, it's good. It's a good movie. I mean, another one of those that maybe I was hyped up. I wanted to like it more than I actually did, but I'm not a huge fan of Clint Eastwood as a director. I mean, he's competent. I'm just not usually not. I guess I'm a different demographic, and this was one of the closer he did for me that it just kind of fell a little bit short, but it's good. I mean, definitely that tsunami scene was pretty awesome. So that's my number one. Before we head out for the week, why don't we recap our top five favorite disaster movies? Ryan, what's your five through one?
Perfect Storm, Melancholia, The Impossible, Armageddon, and Seeking a Friend for the End of the World.
Mine, I'm going to read how I did my top five list, not how we actually went through them, because I moved stuff around for flow. My number five was The Day After Tomorrow. Number four, The Perfect Storm. Number three, Hereafter. Number two, The Impossible. And number one was Deep Impact. Check it out, because it's a good movie.
Any that didn't quite make the list,
yeah,
just fell a little short.
Yeah, one that I actually left off because super obvious that I thought you would have is Twister.
Yeah.
Twisters seemed like an obvious, super obvious one, and I think that would be most people's go-to, if not number one, at least in the top five.
I don't really like Twister, though.
I don't either.
Okay.
I don't either. That's why I didn't care about leaving it off. Like, I don't love the movie like everybody else
no.
did. People in high school, when it came out, loved it, and I just was like, whatever. Like, I don't care.
I like everybody involved in it. I just didn't care for that movie.
Yeah, I wasn't big on that. I mentioned Last Night, Hard Rain and Sunshine, which Sunshine would be my number one, but of course I left it out.
Yeah.
Those are the only ones that really came to mind. Like, I want to like a volcano movie. I really do.
Got a couple you can pick from 1997.
Yeah, that's Dante's Peak and Volcano are my, and Armageddon Deep Impact are like the best.
They're both the same thing. Because
they were
thing.
A year from, yeah.
Yeah, they were both 97 and 98, and they were both the same disaster. I mean, if you would have just switched, you know, Volcano and Deep Impact, wouldn't all four of those movies have made out better?
Yeah, yeah. So, and it's funny because Roland Emmerich was involved in one of those this past year with White House Down and yeah. Olympus Has Fallen. I really want to like a Volcano movie. I haven't seen it, and maybe you shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but by all accounts, Pompeii looks terrible. And it's a shame because I love the story of Pompeii. I love the story of Vesuvius. I like, you know, I did a report in like sixth grade on Pompeii, and I've been
that's
obsessed.
What this movie's based on.
I wish it was.
It's your screenplay.
that I wrote in sixth grade. But I like the story. I just, why they're turning it into what they did doesn't, I mean, whatever. Yeah, that's our favorite natural disaster movies. We got through it. We survived.
I kind of got sick, so I didn't have the energy to do it. But I really wanted to make the argument, not necessarily the Roland Emmerich version, but that Godzilla would have been a natural disaster movie.
Well,
but I just lack the energy to do it.
The Roland Emmerich version actually treated it more like that
yeah.
than the original. Like, cause
but I don't like the Roland Emmerich version.
I don't either.
So that would have been...
The Godzilla theory. Fantastic trailer. One of the best trailers ever. Terrible movie.
Yeah.
But his treatment of it was very much like a natural disaster. Because whereas in the original Godzillas, Godzilla was a monster that seemed to have an agenda. Seemed to want to destroy Tokyo for whatever reason.
And, you know,
Emmerich's Godzilla was just a wild animal that got loose.
Sure. But I guess if the idea is it was spawned from the nuclear bombs that we dropped on Japan, you know, okay, maybe that's a natural disaster. I don't really know. But again, I didn't have the energy to do that. And I do like me some Poseidon Adventure quite a bit. It's a bit of an older flick. But truth be told, I don't like it as much as The Perfect Storm, which was my number five. So,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, so that's our favorite natural disaster movies. If we missed any that you like or you think we're idiots for leaving Twister off and you're a big fan of flying cows, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, Twitter @moviesonup. Like us, follow us, email us and say hi. We're also on iTunes. Leave us a review if you're so inclined. We're on Stitcher. Give us a listen. We're trying to, if there's a way you want to listen to us and we haven't hit that, let us know.
If you want Dave and I to show up at your house and do this podcast live in your living room, we probably would do that.
Probably. I got nothing else going on. So that's it. Until next week. Next week we'll be taking a look at, I don't know what next week's list is. It's a weird favorite solo movies or
kind of.
I looked at it as more survival movies.
Yeah, there's an aspect of survival, of being alone. That's more how I went. But it'll be an interesting list because I don't think there will be the crossover.
No, because I think we went a couple different places with it. But
I think so.
Until then.
Keep it up.